Broadcasting live from Houston, Texas, and around the world. TV host, best-selling author, and radio personality Brad Gilmore brings you a collection of conversations with stars from movies.
Mark Wahlberg.
Hey, how are you?
The legendary Mr. Christopher Lloyd. Christopher, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. Great introduction.
Television.
Jimmy Fallon joins us this morning. Jimmy, how you doing, my friend?
Good morning. Thank you so much, Brad, for having me. I appreciate this, bud.
Kelly Ripa.
Brad, thank you for having me.
Comedy.
Jay Leno joins us. Jay, how you doing?
Hey, Brad, what's going on?
Gabriel Fluffy Iglesias.
Good morning.
Music.
Lola Monroe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The legendary frontman of AC/DC, Brian Johnson, joins us right now. Brian, how you doing?
Good morning, Brockwood. Looking to talk to me, funny lad.
Grammy Award winner Maya joins us.
How are you?
And more.
And more.
This is The Collection. Now your host, The Boat, Brad Gilmore.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Collection. My name is The Boat, Brad Gilmore. Today on the show, I'm getting to speak to a guy who I'm such a fan of. I've always been a fan of, whether you know him from the world of Psych on the USA Network, which is where I was first exposed to him, or from A Million Little Things that just wrapped up its fifth and final season. We've talked to Romney Malco on the show before, so you're familiar with that show. James Rodé Rodriguez is a guy who does things that he's truly interested in and puts his all and his passion into it. And the latest venture for James is producing a play with the Legacy Theater in Connecticut called Master of Puppets, which takes a look at the behind-the-scenes workings of professional wrestling. And as James puts it, is Succession, but in pro wrestling form. It's got an incredible cast, including people who wrestling fans might know from films like No Holds Barred, movie that we hold near and dear to our hearts as professional wrestling fans. And I'm just really excited to talk to him about Master of Puppets. And guess what? You can find out more about this play and its limited run at legacytheaterct.org. That's legacytheaterct.org. Without further ado, here is our friend of the show, James Rodé Rodriguez. James, how we doing, man? Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for taking the time. You look very sharp. You look very crisp.
I'm always trying to get to your level. I'm trying to achieve your levels of physical attractiveness.
You left me in the dust, my friend.
Well, let's talk about Master of Puppets, because for me, I'm a professional wrestling fan since the age of five, when I was turning, you know, the channels down here in Houston, Texas, and saw Stone Cold Steve Austin for the first time. I thought, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Now, for you, I know you've been a longtime wrestling fan, but tell people about what Master of Puppets really is, because there's a kind of a backdrop of the Vince McMahon story in a lot of ways, and the billion-dollar industry that is pro wrestling.
Yeah, I was a huge fan as a kid, too. I grew up in Texas watching, the Freebirds and the Von Erichs, you know, world-class championship wrestling. That was our territory. So that was who came to town. And then, you know, the WWE, which was the WWF back then, was something you could watch on television, you know, once a week on Sunday mornings, I remember. And that was wrestling for me until, Vince bought up all the territories and became the billion-dollar conglomerate that he was, and the first couple manias and all of that sort of took me through, I would say, you know, fifth or sixth grade, and that's when I fell out. That's when I lost my connection. I missed the Attitude Era like in its entirety, and then I got back into it as an adult, which I think is unique, to leave wrestling as a child and come back to it as a grown-ass man. But that's precisely what I did. Because I was working on the USA Network, and we did all this cross promotional stuff with Raw, and I met, you know, half the roster and made real friends with some of them, and was just fascinated by the infrastructure of that business and the fact that they're independent contractors and the stuff that they do 300 nights a year, putting their bodies on the line. And I just grew to appreciate the art form in a completely different way, from a whole new perspective. So that was sort of my background with wrestling. The playwright of Masters and Puppets and I have known each other since, you know, we were 18 years old. And they spent a brief period writing for that giant company, both on the road and in Connecticut. And when they were finished, they were like, there's a story to be told here. I don't know if it's a play or a movie or a television show, but there's enough of an amalgamation, and you know, there are things that can inspire this story. And of course, you know, we don't use any name. All the names are changed to protect the innocent. But we landed on a play because we had produced one of his previous plays and had a fantastic time doing it. So for about 8 years, we developed this story. A lot of things move, a lot of moving pieces, you know, story lines fell off, came back in, you know, we were sort of ripping stuff from the headlines. And what's really, to me, fascinating about the process is that a lot of stuff that just recently came to pass in that company has been in this play for years. It's almost like there was a crystal ball, and you know, and we were telling the future when it came to the sale of the company and who was interested, and a couple other things. It was kind of eerie that we came so close to the mark. When we were just making shit up. But, you know, as much as this sort of peels back the curtain and shows you, you know, sort of the how the sausage is made, the truth of the matter is it is a work of fiction inspired by some of the things that the playwright encountered, some of the things that we know to be true just because we're wrestling fans. But ultimately, it's really a play about family. It's really a play about power and how it can corrupt and breed, and how that can corrupt. And like, if you're a fan of the show Succession, just imagine that empire was a wrestling empire. And that's essentially, you know, what this play deals with. A lot of the same themes. So it wasn't like, hey, let's go after wrestling at all. In fact, you know, it was sort of a love letter to wrestling. But it's a bloody love letter.
Well, I mean, the industry itself lends it to that kind of material. I mean, if you go back in the history of pro wrestling and you see kind of it's not always been a clean story to be told, right? It's not all, you know, peaches and cranberries. I don't know why I chose those two fruits, but that's my point. It was a very dirty tale, especially when Vince would go into these towns and just tell them, hey, like, you know, from us in Houston, it was like, hey, we're going to buy your television slot unless you just want to sell it to us. I mean, that's a dirty move to make. And it's a really, though, inspired move at the same time. He's a very interesting person, Vince McMahon. But when you talk about wrestling, I think that it was a great idea to do this as a play. And the reason why is because wrestling is such it's theater already. It's in front of a live crowd. You have one chance to do it. The lights are on, the camera's on, everyone knows their role, and you just have to go out there and do it. And I think that's why I think the theatrical side of this, doing this in the theater, was the right choice. Was that in discussions of, because you mentioned, do we do this as a TV show or do this as a movie? How'd you land on the theater being the right forum or the right venue for the story?
Because I felt like we could control the narrative more, how it got made, when it got made, where it got made, and weren't going to be, you know, at the mercy of, you know, someone willing to give us millions and millions of dollars, which is what you need when you try to make movies and television. And this sort of allowed us to find the right space, put together our own team, sort of a dream team of actors and a director that I've known for many, many years, the artistic director of the Legacy Theater, and I go all the way back to middle school. It was very familial, and in many ways it kind of felt like, you know, a drama camp from when we were kids, except it was just a bunch of grownups remembering what that was like and the freedom that came along with it, because it was before we all, you know, had to grow up and have responsibilities. It was like that there was something really beautiful about the our beginnings of how we wanted to become artists and kind of going back to that space, which is so safe. And it was such a, you know, such a brief moment in time. And this was not a long commitment, you know, it was 3 weeks of rehearsal and 3 weeks of performance. And so kind of fit into everybody's schedule. And on top of everything, the day we started rehearsal, the WGA went on strike. So nobody even had to worry about like missing out on something. So it was really kind of just the planets aligned for this to sort of be the best version of itself. And everybody's having a blast. And it's just so good to be back in the theater. You know, that's where I started. It's sort of where I grew to appreciate acting. And to your point, you know, wrestling is absolutely theater. It's theater of the absurd. It's, you know, it's commedia dell'arte. It's the carnival. It's all of those things wrapped into one. And now that we know exactly what goes on and how much risk is involved, like when you're watching Raw or SmackDown or one of the premium live events, like I, especially because I have friends who do it now, like my palms are sweaty the whole time because I know what can go wrong. And it's not going to be, uh-oh, I hope nobody forgets a line. It's uh-oh, please land right. You know, please don't take that bump the wrong way. Like I have so much anxiety and sometimes I feel like I can't even watch, but I have to because I want to support them. But yeah, it is absolutely real and live and no second chances.
Well, one of the things that you say regarding Master of Puppets again playing at the Legacy Theater from now until June the 11th, great cast, by the way. I want to talk to you about some of the cast. But one of the things that you say in the press release is Master of Puppets peels back the canvas and gives us a peek at the shoots behind the works, and it's absolutely electric. You know, using some wrestling insider terminology there, I think that it's not surprising that you fell out of love with wrestling as a kid, as we all do. But when you come back as an adult, I think that we're more fascinated with that behind-the-scenes element and learning about this language and this whole culture around something that we've always been told is not real. It's, you know, they use the word fake or predetermined. But when you find out the incredible culture surrounding wrestling from behind the curtain, that's what is really draws me as an adult now to watch and to know and read the sheets and know what's going on at this company or what's going on at that company. What was the one thing during the writing of this story and bringing the story to the stage from the behind the scenes element that you just found completely fascinating and said, wow, I did not realize it was to that extent?
Yeah, I mean, every business is steeped in politics, mm-hmm. of course. But I don't think I realized like the extent to which they really are, for lack of a better word, at times puppets. Like, and here today, gone tomorrow, no matter how over someone seems in that world, no one is indisposable. Like it's hardcore. It's really fickle. It's really cutthroat. And you would think, hey, you put 15, 20 years in, you know, the boss is going to take care of you. And the fact is sometimes that's simply not the case. And that's why you saw a whole bunch of guys, who had been with one company for a really long time, split and go to another one. You know, like you don't do that if you feel like you're going to be taken care of, you know? So it's, what have you done for me lately? And I think sometimes the perception we have as fans is, oh, well, that person is untouchable, right? Very, very few of them are.
If any.
If any. And also like, I think just the minutia of like daily life, like we hear the word independent contractors and, you know, and piece by piece, you start to realize, oh, wow, you know, they don't have medical insurance. Of course, they're not unionized. Oh, they have to get themselves to every location unless it's over 300 miles. So that's why they're teaming up and renting cars together and taking buses and horrible weather and all that. And it starts to mount up until you realize like, wow, like they don't do anything for them, you know, like they got to pay for their own gear. Like there's not even a stipend for gear. Like they provide designers, you know, who will make it for you, but you're out of pocket for whatever you wear to the ring. And they don't have dressers. They don't have costume supervisors. Like your gear isn't taken from show to show in a bag and given to you. You're literally lugging around your own shit at the top of the card.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy, man.
It's wild when you dive into it that much and you realize not only and then to think about, you have 300 dates a year. You finish one show, let's just say Houston. You finish at 9. You're in the main event. Now you got to get in the rental car, drive 200 miles to San Antone to work the Alamo Dome on pay-per-view the next night. And you don't have time to relax, recover, rest. Your body is going on fumes. It's really the adrenaline of the crowd. And that's when you watch even movies like The Wrestler, that's why so many of these guys, it's so hard to walk away. Because that adrenaline rush, it's nothing like it. You experience it in the theater, hitting a joke in the theater and hearing that immediate response, as opposed to doing it for example, in a psych where you know the joke lands, but you don't have that instant gratification. That is such the drug that is professional wrestling.
I mean, they're rock stars, right? That it's coming out and hearing a packed stadium, you know, at full capacity, scream your name. Like there's nothing like it. And the rest, that's the one element of the wrestler that, you know, they absolutely nailed, was why these guys hang on longer than they should and risk, you know, permanent injury or death to do it. It's a fascinating industry. And I think the other misperception that a lot of non-wrestling fans probably have is that, you know, the talent are doing this because it's the only thing that they can do, you know, that, you know, they're uneducated, athletes who, found a way to make a living, you know, throwing their bodies all over the place. And that simply couldn't be further from the truth. Like half of these gals and guys have college degrees. They came from other career fields into wrestling. Like this is a choice that some very smart people are making, like you said, based on, you know, what that pop means and how it makes them feel.
That pop, brother. That's what it's all about. That Road Warrior 88 level pop, chasing that forever. Do you think that wrestling, because there's been more wrestling related content come out, I think, in the last 5-10 years than maybe like ever in my lifetime. When you talk about your Playmaster puppets, you talk about the Stephen Amell show Heels, there's been Glow that was on Netflix. Do you feel that wrestling is getting mainstream appreciation given the multi-billion dollar deal that they just did with WME, that's a talent agency? Do you feel like wrestling from a mainstream perspective is getting the love? And there's even shows like Young Rock on NBC.
I think it's a really juicy chest that it hasn't been open for a while. What I think is that the shows that get greenlit are going to have to be good. I think it's too easy to dismiss wrestling content for all the reasons that we just spoke about. Mm-hmm. I think Glow probably came the closest in its first season to being a show that people were watching who had no idea what wrestling was or how wrestling worked. You know, it was Sisterhood. It was 80s. They managed to sort of put some other elements in place so that people were, you know, being drawn to that show, not just because it was about wrestling. So I think that's going to be the key. Yes, it feels sort of like wrestling is getting its crossover window at the moment, to jump into other mediums, but you know, in order for it to stick, I just think someone's going to have to thread the needle and make a really good show that just happens to be about wrestling. Otherwise, it feels like it's too fringy and it's too easy to go, that's not for me, even though it could be. But you're not going to give it a chance because the subject matter is, you know, guys in tights.
Well, that's what I want to bring up, though, about Master Puppets. Do you feel that people have to have some understanding of the behind-the-scenes workings of professional wrestling to enjoy this, or can you go in fresh, wide-eyed, and have no idea?
One of our goals was to make it accessible to anyone. There's a glossary in the playbill of wrestling terms that you hear over the course of the play that you can look up, you know, at intermission if you want to educate yourself. But for the most part, it's no different than, you know, watching Mad Men or, you know, The Office or Succession or anything that's it's a workplace, you know, comedy drama where you're investing in the characters and you're investing in storylines that feel very relatable, like marriage and boss, employee, and the stakes of everything having to go perfect on one night. You know, so that the success of the company is hanging in the balance. Like, these are sort of, you know, these are easy sort of accessible themes that we're playing with. And then, you know, just the silliness of it all. So yeah, we did not want it to be too insider baseball at all. And I feel like, you know, I feel like we pulled that off because trust me, just from being there for opening weekend, I was looking around and there are a lot of people that I would bet good money I've never watched a professional wrestling match in those audiences.
That's awesome. And again, it's running through June the 11th at the Connecticut Legacy Theater. We have James Rodé Rodriguez, the producer of the show, with us right now. Just a couple last things for you, James. One of the cast members is going to stick out for professional wrestling fans in particular. And that is someone who you've worked with for a very long time on Psych, Kurt Fuller, who wrestling fans were first exposed to in the movie No Holds Barred, the cinematic classic, which I believe is mentioned in the press release as not getting the awards recognition that it truly deserved, with Zeus Tiny Lister and, of course, Hulk Hogan and Kurt Fuller. Was that, other than your connection with Psych, was that almost like why you wanted to reach out to Kurt to play this role in the show? Because he kind of had that wrestling connection?
100%. Kurt's been attached to do this for years and years and years. He's read multiple drafts. He kind of knew this was his full circle moment. he said yes long ago, before anybody else was attached or even thought about. We knew Kurt was gonna play Victor, and look, he's not that far off from the character that he played in No Holds Barred. And Vince produced that movie. So, you know, he spent however long that shoot was, you know, with Vince. And, you know, now he's kind of playing a version of Vince. So he was definitely the right guy for the job.
Yeah, it's a great cast. I want to pay attention to the time here. So let me ask you my final one. And this is just for fun here. Because when we talk about pro wrestling, in me and my conversations with people, we're always like, okay, who's the Mount Rushmore? Who are the four faces that you got to put up there? And for me, it changes every day. Being a Texan, you're a fellow Texan. A lot of the times, it's just all the Texas guys. It'll be like Undertaker, Shawn, Dusty, and Booker. But for you, do you have a kind of a go-to top four faces that would fill James Rodé Rodriguez's Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling?
Like you said, I think it's fluid, and I think it kind of has to be fluid because the industry keeps changing.
Yeah,
and sometimes, you know, two guys might actually start to feel redundant, and you have to just choose one because a new era begins. But honestly, no matter how not fun it might seem, there is no way to do a Mount Rushmore without Vince McMahon. He's on it. He's never going anywhere.
Greatest heel of history, professional wrestling, in my opinion, by the way.
100%. And also, you know, he was the mad scientist behind the whole empire. Next to him has got to be Hulk Hogan because, you know, wrestling crossed over in the 80s. It actually punched its way through the zeitgeist and, you know, became pop culture. You know, he was in one of the Rocky movies, for God's sake.
Thunderlips. Like, yeah.
He is the 80s. Then it gets a little, I think that's when it gets a little more fluid. Like, I feel like I could make an argument for Andre the Giant just because of what he was before all the territories combined. Like, he was the guy that every territory wanted.
Yeah.
Because you know you could pack a house if Andre was coming to town. But again, you know, he was in that same era with Hulk. So I feel like over the years, Hulk probably absorbs that spot on the Mount Rushmore. Where it gets tricky for me is, like, I missed almost all of the Attitude Era. So I feel like any mark is going to be like, dude, Stone Cold's on there and there's no debate. That's probably true. Sure. I just didn't see most of that. But I feel like I will bend to the masses and say that, you know, what Hulk did for the 80s, Stone Cold probably took that torch and kept, you know, the Monday Night Wars and all that stuff alive in the 90s and early 2000s. And then you got one spot left. And that's, to me, is sort of like dealer's choice. You know, The Rock became the biggest movie star in the world.
Yep.
And, you know, people still think of him as a wrestler first. That's pretty cool. Ric Flair did everything you could possibly do as a professional wrestler somewhere else first before finally coming over and finishing his career in the WWE. So he's got to be in the conversation. And then, like you said, because we're from Texas and nobody's ever done it better, Shawn Michaels has to be talked about because he's the greatest worker in the history of wrestling. So I don't know. It's like I said, that last spot is personal. And I probably go HBK, but again, like, I'm not going to argue anybody who says it should be The Rock or Ric Flair. Like, those are all correct answers.
It's so hard, man, because when you really look at all the boxes that one must check to be an elite professional wrestler, you can go through, like you said, the John Cena's, the Roman Reigns, the Macho Man's, you know, you have to go through them all because of, there's so many things. It's whether, do you like their in-ring work? Do you like their entrance? Do you like their promos? Do you like their anything? I mean, there's so many boxes to check to figure out who's the best pro wrestler of all time.
And you mentioned Cena. We didn't even talk about Cena. I love John, and he's so selfless, and he's always been such a company man. Like, you forget, but because, like, John doesn't put himself on his Mount Rushmore,
right?
You know, he is the guy who is always, you know, passing credit off to other people. But the truth is, it was him. It was him for a while,
long time,
and it was him during a time when ratings were down, and, you know, wrestling was not as popular as it had been, and somebody had to keep that train on the track, and it was John, night in, night out. He was never a part-timer when he was the face of that company, you know? Like, what's happening right now with Roman, I think, is kind of a joke. That was not John. John was 300 nights a year. So he absolutely is in the conversation for Mount Rushmore as well.
Yeah, I mean, from 02 to, like, 2020, he pretty much was there the whole run and on top. And people don't realize, when a guy's on top and you're the world champion, you're in the opening segment of the show, you're in the middle segment of the show, you work the main event, you do the dark match afterward, and then you got to still make it to the next town and do all the media, do all the talk shows, do all the radio stations, and carry yourself as the champion. And from what I know, you know, working with Booker for so long, Booker T, I mean, he said John would be the first guy in the locker room. He's the last one to leave. He's seen John picking up trash. The guys left. I mean, just setting that example.
He is that guy, and you don't have to spend more than 5 minutes with him to figure that out and have a great deal of respect for him. And then there are the women who absolutely should be in the conversation too, except that they didn't really get a chance to start showing what they could do, you know, until the last, what, 15 years, maybe?
If that, you know, 5 to 10, but, you know?
Like, just think about what, you know, Becky Lynch has accomplished in such a short period of time, and what that would have looked like if, you know, if the women had been given the same opportunities as the men for as long as they had. We'd be talking about a whole slew of women that belong on Mount Rushmore as well.
Agreed. Totally agreed. I actually had this conversation the other day about Trish Stratus, who just come back to the company. I mean, you can make an argument when you talk about merch, you know, being over with the crowd and working great matches, longevity, memorable moments. Like, you could have her on the Mount Rushmore. She's in the greatest of all time list somewhere in there. And I think Becky's there. I was at WrestleMania this year. Charlotte and Rhea had an incredible match at WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. They brought the house down, man.
Tore it down. So the women definitely need their credit here. But James, I appreciate you for taking the time, man, and for putting on the Master of Puppets, because the one thing I've always appreciated about you for your entire career is you literally go after things that genuinely interest you and that you think you can bring great entertainment to people, whether that's Psych, whether that's A Million Little Things, the horror projects that you work on, or Master of Puppets. I love somebody who really follows their actual passions and interests and doesn't do things for any other reason. So it's always great to speak to you, my friend.
Dude, the pleasure is absolutely mine, and thanks for taking the time and caring and promoting a small little piece of theater in Brantford, Connecticut, man.
Hey, always about the arts. Master of Puppets runs at the Legacy Theater from now until June the 11th. You can see Dana Ashbrook, Kurt Fuller from No Holds Barred, produced by our friend James Rodé Rodriguez. James, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Brad. We'll be right back.